Welcome. Hare Krishna. His Grace Mona Das asked me to speak today, so I decided to entitle this talk, All Talents and Abilities Are Gifts from Krishna. Gifts from God. And essentially I'm referring to Srimad Bhagavatam, First Canto, Chapter 15. God is called in Sanskrit commonly, well, he's called many names. He's called Bhagavan. And Bhagavan means, Van means, the root word of Van is Vat. It means one who possesses. Bhaga. What is Bhaga? Opulences, powers, abilities, whatever. So God, Krishna, Vishnu, is known to be Bhagavan because he is topmost, the possessor of six particular opulences or qualities in particular, according to the Vedas. Aishvaryasya samagrasya viryasya yashasa shriya jnana vairagya yoschapi shanang bhaga itingana. Aishwarya, strength, power. Aishwaryasya samagrasya virya. Well, that's power. Virya is also talent, abilities. Aishwarya is wealth. Virya yashas. What's yashas? Fame. Shri. Beauty. Is that Shriya? Jnana, knowledge, and Vairagya, detachment, renunciation, the ability to let go. As I've said more than one occasion, that's the one no one ever thinks of. The other ones are obvious. You see them on the covers of the magazines, in small measure. Wealthy people, famous people, powerful people, successful people, beautiful people, talented people. Renounced people? Do they put hermits, renunciates, and sannyasis on the covers of the famous magazines? I haven't seen many. Not too many. So they missed that one. It's a very important quality. You have to be able to let go of what? You have to learn to let go of what? In this world. What? Everything. Wait, hang on. You know, I don't mind letting go of a couple things. Here and there. Everything. No. You're asking too much. That's death. That's what happens. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Mrityu Sarva Harashcham. I am Mrityu, death, that Sarva Harash takes away everything. It's better we learn to detach and let go of this, that, and the other now, rather than waiting until death. It'll be a lot harder if we don't start practicing now, right? So, Arjuna and Krishna are in the Bhagavad Gita. I think most of you know that. I don't have to explain that, do I? Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita, the science of yoga, the science of self-realization, to Arjuna 5,000 years ago on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Is Kurukshetra some sort of Shangri-La located someplace? Is it Shambhala? No, that's a place in India. It was a battlefield. It's a sacred place. It's the Kshetra, the field of the Kurus. Kurus, the great family. So, at the end of the Kurukshetra battle, at the end of the war, Arjuna was in Dwarka visiting his great friend and cousin and brother-in-law. And who was he visiting? The king of Dwarka, the prince of Dwarka, Krishna. Krishna drove his chariot during the battle. Arjuna is one of the five Pandavas, the Pandava brothers, whose kingdom had been unlawfully usurped through an illicit gambling match from their cousins, the Kauravas. So after much diplomacy, that didn't work. War was the final straw, which it is after much diplomacy. Nowadays, diplomacy is not so popular. Send some planes, drop some bombs, let's start there and see what happens. It's creating a lot of problems these days, that method, as we know. So Arjuna was coming back from Dwarka, and he's coming back to Hastinapur, where the Pandavas had now regained their kingdom. His oldest brother is Yudhishthira, so he was the king, officially. And a very just and dharmic king he was. And he came in and he saw Arjuna and he said, "Oh my God, what has happened to you?" There's like, I think, a whole chapter in here. It says, "Did this happen? Did that happen? What happened to you? You lost your luster. You lost your sheen. You lost your life force. You seem isolated, alienated, disconnected, drained. What happened to you?" And that begins it. Due to grief, or this is the text from the Bhagavatam, first canon, 15th chapter, text 2. Due to grief, Arjuna's mouth, his lotus-like heart had dried up. Therefore, his body had lost all luster. Now, remembering the Supreme Lord, he could hardly utter a word in reply. Arjuna and Krishna, is this their first time that they came together in this particular lifetime? No. Arjuna and Krishna are famous as Nara and Narayan, the two rishis, the two sages. Nara means human, but that was his name. His name was Nara. It's also a name. Arjuna is Jiva Tattva. That means he is a soul like us. Krishna is Vishnu Tattva, or Narayan. Narayan, Krishna. Krishna is Narayan. Narayan is Krishna. Krishna is two-arm form. Narayan, four-arm form. Krishna is God. Narayan is God himself. He's Vishnu Tattva. He's God energy. And we are soul energy, if you will. So, Nara Narayan Rishi, they have taken many births together. It is also said that sometimes Krishna and Balaram take those births, but we won't get into that part. Nara Narayan Rishi did austerities, penances, meditation in the Himalayas in a very famous place. In the plains of the Himalayas. Where was this place? What is it called? Sorry? Badrik Ashram. Badrinath. Has anybody been there? Badrinath? Just me? I the only one? You must go. It is one of the most potent transcendental places you'll ever see. Badrinath. There's a cave where you can go in, where Vyasadeva wrote the Mahabharata. And just over there is where Ganesh sat to write. He sat at the feet of Vyasadeva when he spoke, and Ganesh wrote, but Ganesh had his own place, his own Bhajan Kutir, some distance away. And this is also the place that Narnarayan Rishi did tapas. What's the river? Alakananda? Alakananda River.
Alakananda.
So, Arjuna and Krishna had known each other for many lifetimes. What did Krishna say in the Bhagavad Gita? Bahuni me vititani. Both you and I have spent many, many, many lifetimes together. Many lifetimes. I can remember all of them. You cannot. Why? Because God remembers everything about everything and everybody. And us as humans, as jivas, typically do not. So, again, to the Bhagavatam, with great difficulty, Arjuna checked the tears of grief that smeared his eyes. He was very distressed because Krishna was now out of sight. And he increasingly felt great affection for him. Where had Krishna gone? He left the planet. This was the end of his work on the planet. Krishna was on the planet for how many years? 125 years. He did what he came to do. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyutanam dharmasya tadatmanam srijamyaham, to reestablish the principles of religion, of dharma, and remove the burden of the armies, in this case, anybody who is overly materialistic, power hungry, controlling, selfish, contemptuous, manipulative, taking advantage of the people in positions of power and authority. That's why he came, as he had done in many incarnations. We could use him right now, would be a really good time. But according to the Shastric schedule, he's not coming anytime soon. But we can hope. So, that's why Arjuna was dismayed, because Krishna had left the planet. Remembering Krishna and his well wishes, benefactions, intimate familial relations, and his chariot driving, Arjuna, overwhelmed and breathing heavily, began to speak. So I'm going to read some of Prabhupada's purports here. In this purport, he says, "The Supreme Living Being is perfect in all relations with his pure devotee. Sri Arjuna is one of the typical pure devotees of the Lord, reciprocating in a fraternal relationship as friends." Sakya rasa, friendship. "And the Lord's dealings with Arjuna are displays of friendship of the highest perfect order. He was not only a well-wisher of Arjuna, but actually a benefactor. And to make it still more perfect, the Lord tied him into a family relationship by arranging his marriage, Arjuna's marriage to whom? Krishna's sister, Subhadra. Now, Krishna's older brother, Balaram, older brother, you know, he's usually He makes the decisions, not the younger brother, at least traditionally. And Balaram, he was trying to arrange the marriage of his sister Subhadra also. To whom? To Duryodhana, who was the main anti-hero in the Mahabharata. He was a bad guy, it turns out. See, and Krishna didn't say much because he was the younger brother. He just, you kind of went around behind the scenes and organized that Subhadra would marry his closest friend, Arjuna. And that's what happened. And when Balaram found out, he was not happy. He thought Krishna overstepped his bounds. A very interesting relationship because Balaram knows that Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. So he tries to function as the older brother from time to time, but what are you going to do? Above all, Krishna agreed to become the chariot driver of Arjuna in order to protect his friend from the risk of warfare. And the Lord became actually happy when he established the Pandavas once again to rule over the world at that time, because he knew that they would be just and righteous kings. Arjuna remembered all of these things one after another, and thus he became overwhelmed with grief. When you know that your closest friend, your beloved friend that you've been with so many years, you know you will never see him again, ever. Loss. It's loss. Arjuna said, next verse, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, he calls him here, Hari, he refers to him as Hari, who treated me exactly like an intimate friend, has now left me alone. Thus, my astounding power, which astonished even the demigods, is no longer with me. This is the point. This is the point of this talk. All talents and abilities are gifts from Krishna. And Arjuna could feel that his special powers, which were not human, they were beyond that, had drained from his being. Because they weren't needed anymore. You'd think he'd still have them up to his death. No. In the purport, Prabhupada says, in the Bhagavad Gita, 10th chapter, 41st verse, anyone specifically powerful, opulent, wealthy, who possesses strength, beauty, knowledge, we said, Bhagavan, Bhaga, and all that is materially desirable, is to be considered but a product of an insignificant portion of the complete whole of my energy. And what's the line? Mamate jonsha sambhava. Sambhavam. That Krishna says, all these glorious, wonderful, marvelous creations that you see in the material world spring from but a spark, an unksha of mama tejas, of my power. We are made in the image and likeness of God. We are God-like beings. We possess a spark of God-like potency. We are highly, highly creative beings. Right? People create absolutely marvelous and wonderful things. You've seen it. We've all seen it. You know them. Maybe you are them. Right? Because that's what God does. We don't do it on that level. We are like the drop of water, the ocean water, that has all the properties of the entire ocean, but not in the same, to the same degree. So, we're just unkshas, small parts. Yet, we can also be highly, highly creative. So if we're made in the image and likeness of God, the image means this is the image. The likeness means that power of creativity and the various other powers that we talked about of wealth, beauty, fame, strength. So Prabhupada continues, no one therefore can be independently powerful in any measure without being endowed by the Lord. Everything you have is a gift from God. When the Lord descends on earth along with his eternal, ever-liberated associates, he not only displays the divine energy possessed by himself, he also empowers his devotees with the required energy to execute his mission of incarnation. It is stated in the Bhagavad Gita that the Lord and his eternal associates descend on the earth many times. And we quoted that verse a moment ago. Bhuni me vititani janmani tapacharjuna. I can remember all the births, you cannot. The closer you get to God, the closer you enter into an intimate, loving relationship with God in any of the rasas, in any of the relationships, the more dear you become and the more you become empowered. In what way? Depends. Depends who you are, depends what your desires were, depends on your mission, it depends how you have surrendered, to what degree, how you are willing to be used in the higher plan, in the divine plan. Na hyasya karichidrajan puman veda viditsitam. O king, no one knows the plan of the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam. Depends how you're being used in the plan. I marvel at Prabhupada. This is just an observation of mine. Prabhupada, our founder Acharya, Bhaktivedanta Swami, finished his university education, and it was the day of graduation where you came and you accepted your diploma. But at that time, he was a follower of Gandhiji in India. He was a nationalist. And so they staged a walkout. They staged a boycott. And many of them did not go to accept their diplomas. Now, theoretically, he already had the degree, but he didn't get the diploma. And one thing led to another, and Prabhupada went into... He studied economy. That's what he studied in school for business. And so there was some connections made. He knew some people and he got into the pharmaceutical business. That's the business he got into. And he was in that business he was married and he had a family. He was in that business for many, many years in the pharmaceutical business. He owned a pharmacy at one point in Hyderabad, and then he was trying to become, a warehouse operation for different, pharmaceuticals. He did different things. But what makes me smile is, when I look at his birth chart astrologically, according to Vedic astrology, Prabhupada never made any money. He wasn't successful. I mean, yeah, he made some money and he got a buy. But some of his schemes, they didn't work. And some of his big financial schemes to expand the business, they didn't work. Why didn't they work? Well, maybe that had nothing to do with his dharma, is what I'm suggesting. I'm not trying to make a judgment, but it didn't work. And he had met Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati when Prabhupada, how old was he? He was like in his 20s or...
22.
Yeah, really, really young. And he says, I didn't even hardly know the man. He says, you must go to the West and preach the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. We just met him today. And so he's, you know, he has a wife and children. So what happened? Well, he finally gave up on business life at some point. He he was always serious about spirituality, became very serious about his spirituality. He renounced the family at, I don't know what age it was, unless somebody does. And he went to live in Vrindavan as a sannyasi. And he studied. And he did his bhajan. And he prepared himself. And finally, in 1965, not in the best of health, he came over to New York. He had tried many years to form a league of devotees in India with Indian people. No one was really interested. Because most of the educated people in India at that time, or even now, I'm sure, were really kind of emulating the West and going more in a materialistic direction. So, you know, re-encouraging them on the path of Dharma and Vedic civilization wasn't going over very big back then. So Prabhupada came and he simply did the Dharma. Sat down, chanted Hare Krishna, spoke Bhagavad Gita, commented on Srimad Bhagavatam, wrote, taught, and became famous all over the world, and generated millions and millions of dollars. Not for himself. Prabhupada never indulged himself with any of the money. But the point here is, once he did the Dharma, once he connected himself with his Dharma, with his life purpose, with his raison d'etre, the meaning of his life, everything exploded. Just according to his plan? Do you think he saw that? No, he didn't. He did not see that. Not like it happened. It was way beyond. Because he was this close to Krishna. He was fully dependent. He was fully surrendered. On his way over, on the boat, he's on a boat? Jaladuta, but it's freighter. It's a freighter. It's not a passenger boat. He's in one of the, you know, comfortable cabins. That's where he is. He had two heart attacks on the way. He thought he was going to die on the way. It's always finished. So here we have the example of Arjuna, who had these powers in association, direct association with Krishna. So whatever it is you feel your dharma is, why are you here? What did you come here to do? Why are you on this earth? Why did God put you here this time around? Is it all about you as an individual? Or is your life all about us? Is your life here to benefit all of us? Or just you? You have a choice. If you're here to benefit everybody, to make your contribution, doesn't matter how big or small, doesn't matter. If that's why you're here, then how are we doing? How close are you? How is it going? Have you been making progress? If you want to make tremendous progress beyond your wildest dreams, then get close to Krishna. If God's the fire, which He is, and you're cold, what do they say when you go to the houses? Stand next to the fire. Very common in Ireland. Please come stand next to the fire. Sit down here by the fire. See where I'm sitting? Right by the fireplace. As close as I'm going to get. That's it. And things will go beyond what you've envisioned, what you've imagined. You don't believe me? Fine. You don't have to believe me. But you can only say I'm wrong once you've tested it out. You can't say I'm wrong until you tried. Right? So, I said here that Arjuna addressed him as Hari. That's one of the names for God. What does Hari mean? He who takes away everything. We talked about that at the beginning. Why is he calling him Hari now? Because he normally didn't call him Hari. He called him my dear Krishna, my dear friend. Now he calls him Hari because he's gone, took away the friendship, and he took away all of his Shakti. All of his energy, all of his power. When he left. Similarly, the Lord takes away with him all of his associates when he disappears from the earth. We done here? We're done. Let's go back. Some of them, we go back to the spiritual world. Some of them, we'll go back to where? Svarga. Higher planetary systems, heavenly planets, where the higher beings, the gods, the sages, the saints, where they live. Do you want to hear the cosmic joke? Let me tell you the cosmic joke. There's only one planet in the universe that has life. That's it, and we're on it. That's the cosmic joke. That's the frog in the well philosophy. You know the frog in the well philosophy? Frog in the well thinks that everything in the well, that's as vast and as that's what it is. There's nothing beyond my position in this well. Somebody sticks his head in and goes, "Hey, how's it going down there?"
Ribbit.
Yeah, you should come down. I got this wonderful world going. No, there's nothing down there. Why don't you come out? No, I'm the king down here. That's science. The power and energy which are bestowed upon Arjuna were required for the fulfillment of the mission of the Lord. Is it reasonable to assume that Srila Prabhupada, when he was here, from 65 to 77, 12 years, 77, 65 to 77, he came to the West. Well, came to the West, went all over. But that's when his mission, his work, his dharma, his purpose began. 12 years he stayed. Is it reasonable to assume that he was empowered on that mission? Is that too much to assume? Was he just a regular holy man? We have to judge by the impact. We must judge by the impact. This is 2016. 2017, next year, how many years will that be? 77... 40 years. It's not bad. It's pretty good. How much consciousness did he raise? He came to raise consciousness. To introduce us to Krishna. I read this morning in the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada said in one of the purports, he said, people who are too materialistic can only in general, I'm sure this is a general statement, but typically we'll conceive of God as energy, as impersonal. In order to grasp the concept that God is actually a person, how come we can do all these things that we do as people, and the way this amazing machine that we have called the body, and it is truly amazing, yet God doesn't have that. No, he doesn't have one of those. That's, you know, that's an extra that he doesn't get, because he's God. Now, we're made in the image and likeness of God. He's not made in the image and likeness of us. So he says that to really appreciate, to be able to enter into an understanding or appreciation of God as a person, number one, what to speak of, enter into a relationship with God. Personal relationship. You can't be a full-blown materialist. Well, you can be, because then once you start entering into that relationship, your materialism will begin to decrease. Does that mean you can't keep making money? Does that mean you can no longer have business success? No. You can still have. But it raises your consciousness. That's the point. And maybe you become less attached to your materialistic goals, right? Arjuna's powers were astonishing even to the denizens of heaven, but these powers were no longer required, and they were not meant for going back home, back to Godhead. He didn't need him to go back home, back to Godhead, Arjuna. If endowment of powers and withdrawal of powers by the Lord are possible, even for a great devotee like Arjuna, or even the demigods in heaven, then what to speak of ordinary living beings who are but figs compared to these souls? The lesson is therefore that no one should be puffed up for his powers, which have been borrowed from the Lord. Don't develop an inflated sense of your own ego, of your own self-importance. What happens when we inflate the ego? When we blow up the balloon, it pops at some point in time, as it should. And then we've got shreds of rubberized plastic all over the place. The lesson is therefore that no one should be puffed up for the powers borrowed from the Lord. The sane man should feel rather obliged to the Lord for such benefactions. The next verse, Arjuna says to Yudhishthira, I have just lost him, Krishna, whose separation for a moment would render all the universes unfavorable and void, like bodies without life. And the word he uses here is mritika. Mritika, dead body, lifeless body. If you have a loved one that you see daily or you have a great relationship with, the body is the vehicle that we use to have this relationship down here in this world. When the soul leaves the body at death, the body is there. All the parts of the body are there. The organs are there. Everything's there, usually. Do you continue to have a relationship with that person? No. You don't. Even the idea is, no, of course not. So what's the attractive principle? Is it the body? No. It's the soul. It's the soul and the body. That's what's so attractive. And isn't it amazing that we have loving relationships, friends and family and loved ones and so many people. We admire different people for their talents and abilities. And we see their body, we recognize pictures, photographs, this, that, the other. But what is the impressive thing about it is the soul. And how big is the soul?
1/10,000th
the tip of a hair. So we can't see it. And the soul resides in the heart. That's interesting. Soul resides in the heart. Wouldn't the brain be more important than the heart? Aren't we in a really left brain society? Logical, rational, clinical, analytical. Right? Proofs, science. I'll believe it when I see it. No. Soul doesn't reside in the brain. Resides in the heart. If the brain's for thinking and discretion and discrimination and learning, what's the heart for? Besides pumping blood. What's the heart for?
Loving.
It's for loving. It's for loving. So now the soul, really you could choose any part of the body to reside in, no? There are stories of mystics who can move their souls around inside their body. When I was in Australia on one of my many trips, I went on a walkabout with an Aboriginal elder out in a bush for a week, sleeping out under the stars, hoping the brown snakes don't get us. They didn't. And he was telling me about some bond man, some Aboriginal mystic that could move his soul around in the body. And what do they used to call them? The white men. You know, largely the British and whomever, were after him for something or other. And they shot him. And then he just ran away. They said, well, how did you run away? You got shot. Well, I just moved my soul to some other part of my body. I can't remember the details. It was real funny. And this man, the Aboriginal elder that I was with at the time, he was in his late 60s. This was quite a few years ago. And the first 14 years of his life were spent wearing a loincloth and running around in the bush with a spear. He was full-on tribal Aboriginal. And then contact, they call it contact, and then contact made. That's when the whites came in and took over like they always do. You know what they're like. Inflated ego, attitude of superiority. We'll just come in there and we'll take over everything and run it because we know better. Oh. Okay then. That's what they did in Australia, many other places. So I said to him, so you've been living since 14 under the thumb of the white government. He's from Australia. Under the thumb of the white government. I know he is. When were you happiest? I said to him, when were you happiest? When was the most happy, most satisfying time of your life? What do you think he told me? Yeah, the first 14 years. When he ran around with a spear in his hand. And killed the animals. You know what they do in Australia? I'm sort of getting off topic a bit. There are many tribes of Aboriginals, as you will have anywhere. Where I come from, in Canada, there are many tribes of Canadian Indians. I've met many of them. And each tribe had a totem animal. I mean, they're hunter-gatherers, that's what they are, you know. They weren't agriculturalists. Each tribe had a totem, a sacred animal. One had the kangaroo, one had the wallaby, one had the koala, you know, different animals. And that tribe never killed their sacred animal, the totem animal, ever. And you know what? And they're all different, each tribe, different totem. You know what this resulted in? Balance of nature. Balance of nature. They didn't overkill anything. Huh? Where are the Aboriginals from? Do you know? When you study their language, you know where they're from? South India. That's where they're from. Way back. Even the declensions of the verb, I mean, the declension of the nouns and some of the verb constructions, exact same as some of the South Indian languages. Interesting. Okay. Moving the soul around in the body. Once the body dies, the soul is gone, the body's no longer attractive. So the body is attractive because of the presence of the soul. And the soul is attractive because of it's directly the energy of God. Can you imagine how attractive we are to each other, different people, and how we can laugh our heads off and have a wonderful time, or we can go to concerts and we can look at wonderful artwork and so many things. Great prasadam, cooking, different things. And it's just a spark of divine energy. Just a spark. So if you got to meet Krishna directly and be with him, what would that be like? Without the soul, the body's useless. Without God, the soul is useless. Let's talk about one story and we'll wrap it up. The Pandavas were having trouble with the Kauravas, their cousins, for many years. I won't get into the whole thing. Most of you know it anyway. And Duryodhana had invited the Pandavas to... He built this palace out of lac, which is resin. And he invited the Pandavas to come to this great palace. You know, this is a little holiday destination, you know. This was the Tenerife of the day in for the Kauravas. But it was built out of lac. It was built out of resin. And the whole idea was to set the place on fire once the five Pandavas and Kunti, their mother, they invited them and they came. And they burnt the place down. They burnt it down to the ground. It melted. It's resin. But the Pandavas had been warned ahead of time. Was it Vidura who warned them? And they dug it. They dug an escape tunnel underneath, and they got out. You know. And then they went in disguise for a while. No one knew who they were. They disguised themselves. Then there was a Swayamvara ceremony of King Drupada. King Drupada had a kingdom. I'm not sure where it was. It was in the north. Was it not close to where Ram had his kingdom? I don't know. Excuse me. Panchala. It was called Panchala, no? The Draupadi is also called Panchali. No?
It's near Nepal.
Is it? Near Nepal. Way up north. So Draupadi was a highly, highly desirable princess. And so in those days, what they would do is they would have swayamvaras, or, you know, kind of like a test of strength for qualified princes and kings, whoever wanted to win the hand of the fair Draupadi. That was the idea. But Drupada, her father, had it in his mind ahead of time that he wanted her to be married to whom? To Arjuna, and only Arjuna. Only. So while the Pandavas were incognito, in disguise, kind of wandering about, they got word that Draupadi's Swayamvara was being held. And so they decided to disguise themselves and go. So King Drupada knew that the only way that Arjuna was going to win the hand of his daughter in a fair manner was to set up a test that only Arjuna would be able to win. It had to be very difficult. Arjuna, of course, was an archer. And he was the greatest archer, bowman, on the planet at that time. Do you know the astrological signs?
Sagittarius.
They in the Western astrology, they say he's a centaur, that Sagittarius, because it's half man and half horse. Forget that. In Vedic astrology, Sagittarius is Arjuna, the bowsman. And it's a Sagittarius of all the signs is the one with the mission. And the symbol is an arrow. It's the man with the mission. That's Arjuna. So here was the test. Many princes, kings came from miles around. They all wanted, and it says here that their eyes filled with lust for the lovely Draupadi. So in the assembly hall, Drupada placed a fish on a wheel, like a chariot wheel, but I don't know how big it was, similar to a chariot wheel. He placed the fish on top, but he anchored the chariot wheel to the ceiling, and he placed the fish on top of it, so it's between the wheel and the ceiling, correct? Then, right underneath it, he put a pot of water. Right? So the test was that you had to take your bow and arrow, look in the water, see the reflection of the fish in the wheel above you, and shoot your arrow at it and pierce the fish. Easily done. Not by most. That was the test. So King Drupada was very confident that there is only two people who could actually do this. They were Arjuna and Karna. Karna, they did not know, was a brother to the Pandavas. I'm not going to get into that story right now. That would be a digression. But he was a brother to the Pontiff. He was actually the oldest brother. So he was a brilliant master bowsman as well. He was a brilliant archer. So Karna had been given up for adoption. Actually, he had been floated down the river in a basket. Have you heard that story before? Well, this is the original version. This predates the Old Testament. He was floated down the river in a basket, and he was found by a carpenter and his wife, who could not have children. I believe she could not have children. Well, this is a gift from God, no? And for them. Now we have a young baby boy. Somebody has floated him down the river, and we have found him. Isn't God wonderful? Isn't life wonderful? So they raised him as their own son. So he appeared. He was a friend of Duryodhana. He appeared in the assembly for the Svayamvara. And of course, he wanted to take part in the contest and Draupadi, of course, the princess would not be saying a lot in the assembly, typically. Draupadi says, no, I cannot accept. He's a Shudra. He's the son of a carpenter. I can only accept Kshatriya or a Brahmin husband. I cannot accept Vaishya or a Shudra. So the Pandavas were in disguise. So they came in disguise as Brahmins. I don't know how warriors with bodies like theirs disguise themselves. And everybody thinks they're Brahmins, but I guess you had to have been there to see it. But so Arjuna was disguised as a Brahmin. And I think he had a hood over his head or something or other, you know. So he goes on, he's some Brahmin. And he's going to use the bow. And of course, he's the only one that pierced the fish. And he won the hand of Draupadi. And Draupadi, in her previous lifetime, was a female mystic. Very, very powerful mystic. She did tapas for many years. I don't know if it was in the Himalayas or someplace. And she was worshipping Shiva for a husband. Not any husband. You know when you really want a husband, ladies? Like, beyond all husbands? Like that. So that's what she was doing for many years. And Shiva finally appeared to her. And she was like, well, thank you for coming. It's about time you got here. He says, well, okay, you can stop your austerities now. You're heating the place up too much. What would you like? What do you want me to give you? I want a husband. I want a husband. I want a husband. Do you hear me? I want a husband. I want a husband. Five times she said. She was in. Okay. We will give you a wonderful husband in your next life. So, Arjuna won the contest, won the princess, and then Drupada was very pleased to find out it was Arjuna in disguise. And here were the brothers in disguise. Oh, the Pandavas are going to be my Arjuna will be my son-in-law. And off we go. So they went back to where they were staying. And Arjuna said, Mother, I want to show you something. Kunti says, I am busy. No, but I need to show you what I've won. Whatever it is, share it with your brothers. I'm busy right now. Share it with my brothers? Now, in these days, mother's word may not be absolute, but in Dwapara Yuga, in the family of the Pandavas, her word was absolute. Draupadi married five Pandava brothers. She was a polygamist of the fifth order. And happily so, apparently. And why did she marry five brothers? Because she asked Shiva five times when the Pandava brother says, "You're going to have to marry all of us. We have to share you." That's what Kunti said. Her mother said that. And then she remembered from the past life. Shiva gave her the memory. Oh, yes. Five times I want a husband here. All of the Pandavas' fathers were different demigods. All conceived through the womb of Kunti. Yeah. So, I had a lot more, but we don't have time. All talents and abilities are gifts from Krishna. You want to expand your talent, you want to expand your ability, you want to make an impression with your lotus feet on Mother Earth, you want to make a big impression, you want to make a deep impression, then get close to Krishna. That's the secret. That's why I'm whispering, because it's a secret. Get close to God and watch it expand. Watch it. Like for Prabhupada, like for Arjuna, like for you. Hare Krishna. Thank you for your kind attention. Questions? Comments?
It's just a doubt that I need to clear up. You know, you were mentioning about the swimmer, they have to shoot the fish. Isn't it that they have to shoot the eye of
the fish? The eye of the fish. You're absolutely right. You're right. It was the eye of the fish. I stand corrected. Thank you. That's a little harder than shooting the fish. I wonder, you know, I always think they spun the wheel. Do you know if they spun the wheel?
Yeah.
The wheel was spinning, yeah. It was spinning, and you had to look in the water. And you had to hit the eye. Good luck.
I believe it also was a special bow, which they had to string up first, and most of the princes failed to even string up.
No, that's Ram. That's Ram stringing Shiva's bow. Yeah. You're right, but different. You're right. It was still Vishnu.
Similarity.
Is it?
Actually, Karna was born out of wedlock. That's why he had to be sent away and adopted.
Yeah.
Yeah. He would
have been the eldest. Yeah. That's what Prabhupada said in here. That's where I got it.
Just a small comment, and then you were saying earlier about the when Krishna came, he came because he wanted to kind of break all the egos of all the kings and so on. Yeah. And it's like it's funny because we're kind of more access to world news now. You see that there is loads of those around today.
Unbelievable.
You know.
Unbelievable how much the people in power prey on us, on the people, in the name of helping us and managing our affairs and protecting us. And you know, it's Kali Yuga. It's Kali Yuga. It's the Iron Age. This is how it goes. And at this time, it's the age of hypocrisy, where people will take positions of authority that they don't deserve, for which they are not qualified, for which they're too wrapped up in themselves. Like right here, right now, you know, they're supposed to form a government, and they're accusing each other of not serving the people. None of them are serving the people because they're running around trying to benefit their parties, and it's nothing to do with the people. We need to hold on to power, or we need to get power. What's that got to do with the people? Nothing. This is pure Kali Yuga behavior. And it's not only going on in this country, so let's be clear. It's going on everywhere. It's rampant.
One more question. Is it true that in the latter days of Krishna, you know, being on the planet, he had a dog which go wherever he went, the dog went with him?
Yudhishthir. Yudhishthir had the dog. Yeah, and he was going up to the Himalayas, and they sent a chariot for him to take him up to Swarga. And to the heavenly realms. And the dog had followed him faithfully, and some dog just latched onto him. It happens. I went on different things in India where some dog would just start. I went on a camel trek one time, and some random dog latched onto us. And the boy who was conducting, he was a 14-year-old boy can't think of the name of it now. In Rajasthan. No. Where's Brahma's place in Rajasthan?
Pushkar.
A sacred place of Brahma. Brahmaji. Mm-hmm. So, the 14-year-old boy and me, that was it on the trek. My son got sick. He couldn't go. So, this boy was amazing. And, you know, we had two camels. And then we stopped in this forest overnight, kind of an oasis in the desert. And some dog came out of nowhere, and the dog followed us, you know, and the dog was with us, you know. And then the boy, he had very little English, and my Hindi wasn't very good. Still isn't that good. Meri Hindi achi nahi hai. So the boy's cooks dinner for us, you know, rice, dal, chapati, sabji. I mean, it was excellent. It was really good. Over an open fire, you know, in the forest. And the dog is sitting there. He says, "We have to, yeah, feed the dog, of course, you know." So then he makes a bed for me next to the two camels who are lying down on their bellies. Well, if you've ever slept with a camel, which I have, way too close, and I think they regurgitate their food, they chew their cud or something like cows do. Well, it is like a toilet being flushed all night long. It's going up and down the neck of the camel, two camels. I didn't get a lot of sleep that night. So that was my camel track trip. Okay, are we good? Yes.
Can I ask a silly question? Which is like, if the body is just a machine, vehicle, you said before, and a vehicle for the soul, why do we have a body?
Why do we have a body? In the spiritual world, we live with God. Our bodies in the spiritual world are made of pure spirit. We have a body there too, but it's pure spirit. It's not made out of earth, water, fire, air, ether. But some people don't want to remain in the spiritual world because in the spiritual world you must surrender to God. God is the center of everything. And it may dawn in you one day that, you know, why am I here serving Him? I'd like to be in charge. I'd like to be the important person. So what does God do? Does He punish you then? No. He just says, oh, okay. I got a spot for you. I call it the material world. We'll cover you over with Maya, send you down here, and you can fulfill your desires, whatever your desires may be. And as you know, we have free will. We can do whatever we want, pretty much. We can even do things we shouldn't do if we don't get caught. And you can fulfill your desires. That's why you have the body. Because you wanted it. You wanted this autonomy and independence that you felt you didn't have in the spiritual world. But in the spiritual world, you had eternal life, full knowledge, no bewilderment, no confusion, and bliss. The constitutional position of the human being, of all beings, Anandamayobhyasat, Vedanta Sutra, is what? Ananda is bliss. Complete, unadulterated happiness and joy. When? All the time. I dare say, unless you can tell me by show of hands, are you absolutely blissed out, happy, and wonderfully joyful all the time? Please raise your hand. 24/7. And why aren't you? Because that's your birthright. Not birthright here, but that's what the soul actually is by nature. So down here, you know, we don't realize that we've, let's say it nicely, made the wrong choice. And we're trying to get back to where we belong. That's what we're trying to do. And get off the wheel of samsara, repeated birth and death. The problem is we're not aware of so many things because we're covered by maya, by illusion. And it's not easy to extricate yourself from maya. It's very difficult. Very difficult. And it usually takes many lifetimes. I recommend you extricate yourself. And even though your body seems to be very nice, don't get another one. Okay. Prabhu. We're going to have kirtan. After that, followed by a wonderful vegetarian feast. You're most welcome. It is prasadam. It is food that has been cooked with love and offered to Krishna on the altar. Which means it will actually dissolve some of your negative karmic reaction. Oh yes. It will. Program here is simple. A little chanting, a little dancing, taking prasadam, and getting close to Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.